Blog Talk Radio.
Last week or so, and I wasn't able to put it up, but
I hope you get a chance to check that out. But anyway, here's Keith.
His administration's approach to the Libyan crisis today, emphasizing that, hey, it was an international mission and that other countries are going to be taking over in just a matter of days. Now, optimistic words from an optimistic president. Joining me to make sense of all this is independent journalist and war correspondent Keith Harmon-Snow. Keith, thank you so much for being here. Now, you heard what the president had to say, so was all the hand-wringing about another protracted conflict a waste of time? I mean, Obama said we're almost done, right?
It's interesting that he says that it's immediately going to transfer over to the other folks when it was supposed to be an international coalition that we would support. And also he says at the end of the first paragraph of one of the speeches that he gave, to relieve the burden on the U.S. military and the nation's taxpayers, it would be shifted to an international coalition. This is such nonsense. If they cared about America's taxpayers who are funding all of these wars, they would take some serious steps not to be involved in these kinds of things.
Yeah, I love how they just pick and choose when to emphasize the international part of it and when not to. But, I mean, if you look at Libya, I mean, this is a country that most Americans probably couldn't place on a map even if you had it labeled. So why do you think we choose this so-called just cause and not the myriad of other oppressed countries that we typically ignore?
Gaddafi's an easy target. First of all, the media is now saying, and the administration is saying, that there's less than 2% of the world's oil comes out of Libya. This is nonsense. Libya is a significant oil producer with massive concessions across the country that involve Italy, France, United States, and Britain, oil operations, big oil in there. Gaddafi is an easy target. It's easy to take him out at this point because they knew that he was weak. He was weak because he had militias that supported him, and the coalition had allowed these rebels to generate a movement against Gaddafi, which included a very nationalist popular uprising component. And then once Gaddafi rolled against these other forces, these rebel forces, to justify taking Gaddafi out by having already convinced the American public for the last 40 years that Gaddafi is the number one terrorist, when, as you were pointing out, why Libya, when you've got massive terrorist countries being run by terrorist war criminals, including President Yoweri Museveni in Uganda and President Paul Kagame in Rwanda. So the argument that Obama made that this is a warlord running a country is just nonsense.
Well, the thing is, though, I don't really buy the whole war for oil argument, because if you look at what happened with Iraq, for example, I mean, I think even the most hardened neocon can see that whole invading a country for the resources just doesn't work. I mean, it takes, you know, it's the pottery barn rule, right? You break it, you pay for it. By the time you actually get the operations up and running, you don't really have very much to make money off. So I don't know if I really buy that.
So what is it, Lucy? Do you think that it's about selling defense weapons or testing new weapons that the United States might
have? You tell me. You're the guest. Well, weren't they supposed to test the F-22s? I haven't seen anything about those being deployed.
They are definitely testing new weapons at this very moment. This is just another American, illegal, discredited adventure in attacking people and calling it humanitarian and justifying on the basis that supposedly it's humanitarian, it's for the best of the world, but really it's about seizing control of Libya and making sure that any popular uprising in Libya is eliminated, and at the same time advancing our interests. Oil, defense, uranium, gold in Libya. These are big mineral concessions available.
You know, the two words that you frequently hear from this administration is the whole limited intervention. This is supposed to be a limited intervention, right? But I've read some analysts calling the whole concept of a limited intervention to being akin to a gateway drug for expanded conflict. And if you do go through history, I mean, almost all of the multilateral interventions in recent times, from Korea to Somalia to virtually every single case, there were multiple UN resolutions authorizing even greater and greater military involvement in the conflict. So can we expect that this is also going to turn out into another drawn-out war, or do you think that this will be limited as they claim?
It's hard to say, Lucy. Could be quick. It could be the plan is and always has been to just go in there, send in 110 Tomahawks and the first set of bombing sorties and a bunch of planes and do some massive damage and then pull back and say, okay, let's clean it up, France. Let's clean it up, Italy. Let's clean it up, Korea. Let's clean it up, Japan. Oh, no, sorry. We can't use Japan anymore. So that may be
Ouch.
The plan, and it may have been, yeah, exactly.
Too soon.
So it may be that there's going to be a protracted conflict here, which is also what's in the, that's what the United States wants, another protracted conflict. on one hand, Obama saying, well, we don't really have the capacity to get into this. We just have to make some strikes for the humanitarian purposes. We don't want to charge American taxpayers too much money anyway and put a burden on them. So a few strikes here and there, and we'll be out quick. That's what we do. We have done that in the past. For example, Grenada or Panama, two fairly quick operations that we mopped it up, killed off anybody who would say anything that we didn't like, and then took control of the country. And at the same time, we don't know. It could be short. It could be long. It's hard to say. If Algeria gets involved, if Egypt gets involved, if some of the Arab League countries get involved, and it's interesting to look at who they are, because some of them are very much in the American camp, like Somalia and Djibouti. Djibouti has one of America's biggest bases of covert operations in Djibouti. So it's very interesting to look at the so-called Arab League and their position. First, go ahead, we support the humanitarian intervention, and then, wait a minute, what do we get involved in? It's like, what did you guys think you were signing up for here?
Right, right. Well, you mentioned some of the previous conflicts, Grenada and some others, so I do want to get a little bit into the historical context here. Of course, the action in Libya may have been a surprise to some Americans who may have voted for Obama thinking that, I don't know, he's going to pull us out of these previous wars. Well, it turns out that waging war has been almost a rite of passage for the last few U.S. presidents.
That was
a very good interview.
Yeah,
I bet it was, it's probably longer, but that was as much as we have.
Yeah, but there's another piece here that says, dishonest journalists fuel war propaganda, which is true, by Keith. And, he's great. And, I wish him the best. And, please pass this on.
And he always has the most current information, so he's really
good. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so
the next one I wanted to get into was a couple other things here. This one here on
the West owns Libyan opposition.
Right. Okay, hang on a second. I'm just going to go into that. And
the CIA, with the help of the Egyptian military, took control of Libyan opposition forces, arming and funding them against the forces of Libya's longtime ruler, Muammar Gaddafi. It now appears that after some Libyan armed generals joined the CIA-run opposition, a new U.S.-friendly regime could be coming to power soon. Press TV talks with author and political commentator Berkeley Ralph Schoenman, who elaborates on this development. Press TV. Do you see this war in Libya as being dangerous to the entire Middle East region?
Schoenman. From its inception, the intervention by the U.S. and the NATO powers in Libya have been designed not to advance but to undermine and destroy a popular movement in that country. The initial uprising in Libya was in relation to the uprising in Tunisia and Egypt. We have to remember that since the 1990s, the Gaddafi regime, which has been a thorn in the side of imperialism, had not merely capitulated but had entered into open alliance. Richard Pearl was advising the Gaddafis, and so was Richard Cheney and Halliburton. All of the major industries had been privatized, and the oil turned over to Mobil, Exxon, Total, Repsol, and ENI. And even the Clinton State Department had made arrangements to give special consideration and support to the sons of Gaddafi, and a joint declaration had been made by Gaddafi and Condoleezza Rice. A normal opposition by the Gaddafi government of imperial design has long ceased to happen, and most recently Gaddafi was supporting Ben Ali in Tunisia and Mubarak in Egypt, right to the last. The initial uprising in Libya entailed workers securing the oil at Ras Lanouf, and their demands were very specific in relation to workers' control over oil production and the wealth of Libya.
So the intervention had as the pretext the nominal brutality of Gaddafi, not merely helped and advised by special forces of the U.S., but deployed like it was against Saddam Hussein and before that with Noriega, as a cat's paw pretext for intended design to seize control of the uprising and deploy it as an opportunity to put troops on the ground. There is no ambiguity about this. Gates has already declared in the 10th of the U.N. Security Council. In the teeth of the UN Security Council resolution, that there is no time limit, but it is not reasonable to say the timeline for war to end, and indeed the war in Libya is what he called open-ended. Stratford Global Intelligence confirmed that 100 Egyptian commandos have been in control of opposition forces since early March at Washington's behest. The UK, SAS, US Special Forces, and CIA operatives have been there, according to Stratford, for months. An Israeli news website confirmed that indeed these forces had been there at the request of the U.S. intelligence service to dictate control over the opposition movement and to impose spokespeople on it.
The thing I don't understand on this is why Israel would be funding Gaddafi's. Gaddafi's mercenaries. That I didn't understand, even though that was reported.
I don't know. Maybe that wasn't true. Maybe what we read was not true.
Maybe, but...
We did read that, however.
And several sources. As Israeli news website confirmed that indeed these forces have been there at the U.S. intelligence services to dictate control of the opposition movement to impose spokespeople on it. You just read that, didn't
you? Yeah, I did.
As we saw with Gates in Cairo, where he was embracing Tatawi, the general who has now decreed it a crime, criminalizing strikes, demonstrations, and sit-ins that hinder private or state-owned businesses, affect the economy in any way, a decree which assigns severe punishment to any who call or incite action in prison sentences assigned, the state of emergency maintained, the same general Tatawi, with Gates, has acknowledged that Egyptian forces are in Libya, carrying out an operation against the Gaddafi regime in normal support of the opposition, which is no longer an opposition to anything that imperialism would fear. And that's the object of the exercise. It is an imperial undertaking aimed at the workers and population in North Africa, Tunisia and Egypt, Yemen and the slaughter in Bahrain, absolute total reign of terror at work in Bahrain, and all doctors and surgeons being rounded up, disappeared, kidnapped, and killed. And that's the real character of this imperial intervention, to subjugate the people of the region with yet another bloody imperial occupation.
Press TV, how do you feel about the argument that if the intervention in Libya succeeds and democracy is brought in there, that that would be a good thing for other democratic movements throughout the region? Schoenemann, it's nauseating hypocrisy. There's little interest in a democratic movement anywhere. These dictatorial regimes have been maintained by the U.S. with funds and arms over decades. $74 billion given to the Egyptian military. For the record, Gaddafi privatized 306 major industries, signed a declaration with Condoleezza Rice in joining the World Trade Organization, and imposing the criteria requirements of the International Monetary Fund and the issue of nominal not nationalization, when in fact the de facto operation of oil has been turned over to these major conglomerates, speaks to the actual character of the regime. It's being deployed now or rendered like Noriega and Saddam Hussein, who worked with Washington for 27 years.
But the basic operation here, in respect to the uprising in Libya, which in its initial phase had the same character and quality, particularly amongst the working class, given 30% unemployment and an 85% increase in foodstuffs over a space of just months, a crisis for the population. The consequence upon the capitulation of the demands of world capital and imperial regimes of the likes of Cheney and Richard Perle, the Prince of Darkness, as he's called, has brought a cynical operation, a pretext for intervention. As for Sarkozy and the NATO allies, the capitalist ruling class in France had an extremely close relationship to Gaddafi's family. And France, Italy, and Great Britain were cultivating Gaddafi in every possible way and were, in fact, fading him and his family insofar as they were obtaining concession. There was, of course, inter-imperial rivalry, but the base of NATO is to obtain crumbs from the table of conquest, and that's the basic relationship that is unfolding as we speak.
The U.S. will dictate the military and economic agenda and make some minor concessions to their junior partners in European colonial and capitalist regimes. But the basic issue we have to confront is that humanitarian concerns has absolutely nothing to do with a country whose ruling class has killed 2.5 million people in Iraq, a half a million people in Afghanistan, and continues to slaughter them in Bahrain and Yemen and across the world. Do we really think it's possible to assign humanitarian concerns to a ruthless ruling class conducting an imperial
genocide
of nature and consistent subjugation of people across the planet? No one should be taken in by this. Today, Libya, tomorrow, Iran, and no other country is safe. They have a couple of hundred military bases. Everywhere in the U.S. projects its military control to subjugate and immiserate the peoples of the world and put them before a torture apparatus funded by the CIA and the Mossad in every single example one can cite, with the addition of the British in Bahrain, whose Ian Henderson conducted for four decades a torture apparatus that is rival to none. That's the real face of imperialism.
How do you, Press TV says, how do you feel about the words of leaders saying opposition fighters may have ties to Al-Qaeda? And Shulman says, I think that's largely nonsense. I don't believe that there is an Al-Qaeda. You talk about a conspiracy notion. I can tell you firsthand, having spent time in Islamabad and other places with former heads of the ISI, discussing with care the nature of what was taking place. Al-Qaeda was a marginal element that had no real force on the ground, so it's a contrivance and an invention of U.S. imperialism to provide ideological cover for adventures and seizures of nations and breaking up these countries into their ethnic and religious components. An agenda long on this horizon and requiring a new ideological rationale with the collapse of the former Soviet Union, namely the war on terror. The notion that Al-Qaeda is an element or a factor in the region is just propaganda, and the extent to which Gaddafi regime had referred to it was simply a call to the West, the backers of Gaddafi, to remind them that we are allies. I'm with you. Don't turn on me now. And in Egypt, the U.S. Sought to put forward opposition figures, whether from the Muslim Brotherhood or the Al-Baradi, whose advisors are Armitage, Brzezinski, and Shimon Peres. Holy shit. And this is closely related to the Libya agenda in Libya.
Doesn't it? The Libyan generals that went over very quickly to the side of the opposition did so in order to take control of the opposition and to subordinate it to the imperial powers. Until a struggle for liberation combines the democratic tasks of national independence and sovereignty and a democratic entitlement with social ownership of the means of production, neo-colonial regimes will displace a mass movement, will contain it or corrupt it in any manner to suppress it, and we see that dynamic unfolding. I think the mass entirety in the history witnessed in the Middle East speaks to the oppressed and the subjugated in every part of the world, and the state of imperialism and of the economic capitalist order of today is that of a system that is in terminal decay.
Absolutely. And that was by Press TV, and you can check that. That's, of course, I have to be honest, that's Iranian television or Iranian press, but nevertheless, it tells a lot. Okay. West violates Article 27 of UN Charter. I wonder what that is. Let me just double check that.
Long article. If you're interested in it, you can go to Press TV and find it.
Yeah, they got a tremendous number of things on there. It's a very good site. We got a few more minutes before our guest comes up.
U.S. President Barack Obama says Washington will help implement a civilian government in Libya after a possible fall of embattled Libyan ruler Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah. Yeah, we know his whole thing last night was just a piece of crap. I hadn't seen it.
Leo's referring to the speech that
his speech last night was
Obama
speech
gave.
Was so bold-faced lie. It's just about as bad as it was. It reminded me of George Bush. It was impossible to watch.
Well, we're now into our third war under him.
Yeah, under this bastard. All right, I wanted to. There was one really important one I wanted to read here. Before we give up. Oh, yeah, that was important. But there was
on
the EPA.
Fukushima?
Yeah.
Oh, the.
Yeah, here it is. Radiation, no.
No, that's not it.
It's coming.
It's 4 times the...
Yeah, it was really, really, really bad.
The EPA is kind of fudging their numbers.
Yeah, they're fudging their numbers.
That's completely. The Environmental Protection Agency.
Did I miss it?
Yeah, you went too fast.
Or somewhere.
Let's see. We're going to find the one on the EPA. Well, just a second.
Come on.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, no.
Nope, that's the one on the rainwater. Keep going. Back. Nuclear rods.
I
want
to bring you that one. That's very important. But this one, this EPA thing is very, very strange. Oh, here it is. No.
That's so fast.
I don't have to read it. EPA to help mainstream media obscure the truth about radiation exposures to Americans. As Americans focus on March Madness and Dancing with the Stars instead of the radioactive plume spreading across the country, the U.S. EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, is attempting to make the mainstream media cover-up of the Fukushima cloud a bit easier. The agency, now notorious for its infamous claim that the air was safe to breathe after 9/11, is now seeking to raise the protective action guides to levels vastly higher than those at which they are currently set, allowing for more radioactive contamination of the environment and the general public in the event of radioactive disaster. PAGs are policies established by the EPA that guide the agency in enforcing the various environmental laws, such as the Clean Air and Water Act, in the event of radioactive emergencies such as nuclear dirty bomb or factory meltdown like that occurring in Japan. So, freaking EPA is at it again, folks.
Yep.
Hang on a
second. Just like they did on 9/11.
And the rest of this in a second here.
I'm sorry, this is so late and coming up. Let's see.
Okay. PAGs.
The EPA has already established PAGs in the area in 1992, they can be found here. However, the agency now plans to amend and release these standards this year. Because regulatory agencies form their own policies, although they can be directed by either President or Congress, there is no requirement to seek congressional approval for these changes. All that is required is that the agency place the proposed changes in the Federal Register for public comment before it finalizes its draft into legal policy. According to PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, the new standards would drastically raise the levels of radiation allowed in food, water, air, and the great general environment. PEER, a national organization of local, state, and federal employees who has access to internal EPA emails, claims that the new standards result in nearly a 1,000-fold increase for exposure to strontium-90, a 3,000 to 100,000-fold hike for exposure to iodine-131, and an almost 25,000 rise for exposure to radioactive nickel-63 in drinking water. This information, as well as emails themselves, were published by CollapseNet on March 24th.
In addition to raising the level of permissible radiation in the environment, PEER suggests that the standard of cleanup after a radioactive emergency will actually be reduced. As a result, radioactive cleanup thresholds will be vastly lowered, and by default, permissible levels of radiation will be vastly increased in this manner as well. As Michael Kane writes for CollapseNet, the current EPA numbers, as well as those generally agreed upon in the international radiation assessment community, all point to the fact that these increases in permissible levels would create a level of radiation where approximately 1 in 4 people who contract cancer from exposure to them.
Oh.
Christ. Okay, and the change in the 1992 PAGS are not a new attempt by EPA. The agency attempted similar changes in 2009, but the revisions were stopped largely by a barrage of Freedom of Information Act requests and a lawsuit filed by PIER. However, in 2009, there was no massive radiation disaster the EPA needed to cover up as there is at this time. And in 2009, EPA could afford to back off, regroup, and try again at a later date. Unfortunately, it is not likely to react the same way this time around. And as for the time of this writing, a toxic cloud of radiation has not only reached the U.S. West Coast, but has spread all the way across the countries to states like South Carolina, Florida, and Massachusetts. And both the U.S. government and the mainstream media are largely denied any risk associated with the radiation and have actively engaged in covering up the extent to which it has spread across the country. And in the event of any real journalism, the revelation of the danger and scale of the Japanese radiation cloud could be disastrous for those who hide the truth from the people who are sure to suffer the consequences. Indeed, the revelation that a toxic cloud of cancer-causing particles is littering the United States, especially in real time, might even be too much for the average television and sports-obsessed American to handle. However, the lowering of safety standards for radiation contamination would be a major victory for those wishing to cover it up. After all, the talking heads would then be able to claim that the radiation levels are within the safety range set by EPA. No cause for worry.
Regardless of the motivation behind these new changes, they must be actively opposed. We cannot allow the veil to be pulled even further over the eyes of the American people. At the very least, we cannot allow an agency charged with protecting both the environment and the people who live in it to set standards, alleviating itself of that responsibility. This article was by Brandon Tuberville. He's the author out of Mullins, South Carolina. He has a bachelor's degree from Francis Marion University, where he earned the PD Electric Scholars Award as an undergraduate. He has had numerous articles published dealing with a variety of subjects, including health, economics, and the civil liberties. He is also the author of Codex Elementarius.
The End of Health Freedom. And this was published on the Intel Hub. Okay, so check out the Intel Hub. Okay, and there's a short video that goes with this if you want to.
Yeah.
It's only 2 minutes long.
Further ado, let's just dive right into this, and I'm going to read you the article. This is from the Tennessean, and the article is, Group warns EPA ready to increase radioactive release guidelines. This is by Annie Payne. The EPA is preparing to dramatically increase...
We just read this whole thing, so it's the same.
It's the same thing.
Same thing. So, anyway, what I wanted to do...
While we're waiting for Ellen to call...
Yeah, we will go back to the main frame here. And
yeah, so how about the four times the spent rods?
Yeah, that
in
was
the American,
very, that was really important.
In our American reactors,
that,
it's very
that was
important.
Critical. That was really critical.
That people understand this, that
where is it?
They're okay. Violating safety standards.
Yeah, there it is.
U.S. stores spent nuclear fuel rods at four times the pool's capacity.
In a recent interview with Real News Network, Robert Alvarez, a nuclear policy specialist since 1975, reports that spent nuclear fuel in the United States comprises the largest concentration of radioactivity on the planet, 71,000 metric tons, worse since the Yucca Mountain Waste Repository has been scrapped due to its proximity to active faults. See, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has allowed reactor operators to store four times more waste in the spent fuel pools than they're designed to handle.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if we had a...
Oh, my God. We live next to two of them. We're within 50 miles or 100 miles away from
each
both of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if either one of them blew up, we'd be totally screwed. And
We're not that far from
folks
that are listening. We're not that far from Indian Point, which is in New York State.
And Braindead Obama
Millstone,
wants to build
which is
more
in,
of them.
Yeah, and Millstone, which is in
Waterford,
yeah.
Each Fukushima spent fuel rod, holds about 100 metric tons, he says, which each U.S. Pool holds from 500 to 700 metric tons. A single pool fire would release catastrophic amounts of radioactivity, rendering 17,000 to 22,000 square miles of area uninhabitable.
Wow.
That's about the size of New Hampshire and Vermont for one pool fire.
Wow.
So, pal, we would be just, we would be cooked.
We'd be screwed.
We would be really cooked. I mean, this we're living right nearby. So, yeah, this is from Activist Post, by the way. Let's see. In a March 25th interview, physicians and nuclear activist Dr. Helen
Caldicott
explains.
That there is far more radiation in each of the cooling poles than there is in each reactor itself. Now, the very short-lived isotopes have decayed away to nothing, but the long-lived ones, the very dangerous ones, cesium, strontium, uranium, plutonium, americium, curium, and neptunium, I mean really dangerous ones, the long-lived ones, that's what the fuel pools hold.
Yes.
Nuclear waste in the form of pellets are loaded into metal rods that are bundled into a fuel assembly. The assemblies are stored inside casements that are then submerged in cooling pools that are located at the top of the nuclear reactor.
And this one, they show a diagram.
They show a picture, yeah. The image at the top of the article shows an entire pool filled with these assemblies. There are millions of rods around the planet, reports Reuters. As a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, Alvarez was part of a multidisciplinary international team that looked at possible terror attacks on nuclear facilities, focusing on the spent fuel storage pools. In 2003, they released a report, reducing the hazards from stored spent power reactor fuels in the U.S., which calls for transferring the spent fuel from the pools into dry cask storage. I thought they were doing that in Connecticut. The report recommends that 75% of the spent rods be removed from each of the pools and stored in ultra-thick concrete bunkers capable of withstanding aerial impact. The project would take about 10 years and would reduce the average inventory of 137 C's radioactive cesium in the U.S. spent fuel pools by about a factor of 4.
The NRC attempted to suppress the IPC report. Alvarez says the response by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and nuclear industry was hostile, but the National Academy of Sciences agreed that a fire and an overloaded fuel pool could be catastrophic, and the NRC attempted to block the Academy's report as well. The NRC serves industry, not the public, and by controlling the purse strings, Congress has forced the NRC to greatly curtail its regulatory programs, said Alvarez. Engineer Keith Harmon Snow, again, couldn't agree more. He recently lambasted the NRC and the mainstream media by downplaying the ongoing catastrophe in Japan. He notes that the atomic bomb that exploded in Hiroshima created about 2,000 curies of radioactivity. The spent fuel rod
Vermont Yankee Nuclear Plant in the U.S. is said to hold about 5 million curies, and that's just one U.S. nuclear plant out of 104, not to ignore the undisclosed number of research sites, then consider the several nuclear plants sit on geological faults. I don't know whether you want, Leo, whether you want to find Ellen's number and call out while I finish this article, because she should have called in by now. Maybe she was confused, because it's 8:39. Maybe you could get her number and call out. I think that'd be a good idea. Take a look. Nuclear waste is a serious and deadly and growing problem that the industry refuses to address, preferring to externalize disposal costs onto the public, even suing the U.S. government to clean up its mess for them. Under a 1998 law, it is no doubt favored. Unless the radioactive waste is laser launched toward the sun, we're stuck with waste that will contaminate the biosphere for thousands of years. for the measly price of 25 to 30 years of electricity. The risk far outweighs the benefit. This energy choice exemplifies the insanity of the nuclear industry and its government protectors. Oh, I agree 100%. That is crazy.
There's one more I wanted to do, read to Philip.
Okay. Let's see. Why don't you find that number?
Yeah, well, there's one up here.
Why don't you find the number and I'll find this article here.
Here's a kind of a funny one. The one about Biden putting somebody in the closet. I thought that was bizarre.
Biden aide apologized after reporter kept in storage closet during fundraiser. That is so weird. The vice president's press secretary has apologized to a local political reporter after he is kept in a storage closet during a Florida fundraiser. Scott Powers, a reporter with the Orlando Sentinel, was relegated to the storage space during a fundraiser Wednesday for Senator Bill Nielsen, Democrat of Florida, apparently to prevent him from speaking to people before Vice President Biden showed up. Let's see. The Orlando Sentinel published a brief account of the incident earlier in the week. Biden's spokeswoman, Elizabeth Alexander, reporting to coverage of that account, said in a written statement Sunday that the decision to hold Powers there was a mistake and not in that the reporter had accepted unequivocal apology. The apology was made shortly after the fundraiser. That was the unfortunate mistake of an inexperienced staffer, and the vice president's office has made sure it'll never happen again, she said. She explained that hold rooms are typically provided for pool reporters covering the vice president when he speaks at private homes. In this case, Biden was speaking at the home of a wealthy developer, and the reporter was told to wait in a storage closet, which Alexander said contained open space as well as a table and chair where the reporter could work. She said the space was chosen because of its close proximity to the room where Biden was speaking. A hold room, however, should not be a storage room, she clarified. The Sentinel originally reported that while about 150 guests waited for Biden to arrive at the $500 a head fundraiser, somebody from Biden's advance team ordered Powers to stay in the storage closet until Biden took the podium. To enforce the order, the staffer stood watch outside the door, according to the Sentinel, which posted a photo of Powers took of his cluttered temporary prison. Powers eventually left the closet to watch the vice president. He later sent out the lengthy report on his remarks to members of the media. The media itself did not mention the closet, saying only that press coverage was limited to a single pool reporter who was allowed to listen to the remarks but not given the opportunity to talk with anyone at the event. Powers later gave me a more detailed account, which happened to the Drudge Report, saying he had to wait in the closet for about an hour and 50 minutes before emerging to hear Biden and Nielsen speak.
Why don't we go for a little music break for a minute, and I'm going to see if I can locate it or number.
Okay, I will play.
Hang on a second, I did locate it. There it is. And I'm going to call her and see what happened. I hope this is okay.
I'll put on the blues right now. We'll take a short music break.
Let's put on the All You Can Eat there.
Oh, there it is. All right. I will play that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
going to work. Not hang everybody up.
What's your guest phone number?
It's six.
I can't see.
There, let me do it. Okay.
Now, Leo's going to put in the guest phone number.
Just keep talking.
Hopefully this will work. We did before. We dialed out before.
Yeah, let's see.
It'll be dialing up.
Back to here. Okay.
Yeah, and I will read a little bit here.
Okay, right. We're kind of moving around here.
So, let's see. Qatar has recognized Libya's rebel council as a legitimate representative of the Libyan people a day after the group announced an oil contract with the Gulf state. The move on Monday makes Qatar only the second country to formally recognize the Libyan rebel council, but has been backed by the Gulf Cooperation Council. A statement from Al-Bahram Attaya, the outgoing GCC Secretary General, said Qatar's recognition of the Transitional Council as the only legitimate representative of the Libyan people comes in line with the decision of the GCC. Let's see what else we have. The West owns Libyan opposition. The CIA, with the help of the Egyptian military, took control of the Libyan opposition forces.
Okay,
we should have a number now.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hi, Ellen. Can you hear us? Ellen?
Put it on there. Hello, Ellen? Hello?
Hello? Oh, shoot. So hopefully we're still on the air. Yes, we are.
Okay.
She couldn't hear us.
I guess she couldn't hear us. Maybe she'll call in. That's what happened last time when we called someone who didn't call us. I don't know whether it was Ellen or not that we had trouble getting a hold of. Did you want to try her one more time?
Yeah, but unfortunately I don't know how to talk to her.
We talked to the other person that way through the phone. I don't know.
But, anyway, let's try it one more time.
So Leo's going to try her one more time and see if he can get a hold of her. I don't know how that's going to how it's going to work or not, whether she'll call us.
I don't know.
We just have a few minutes to talk to her anyway.
Well, you know what? Let's kind of forget about it because I'll get a hold of her another time. She obviously somebody's...
Just X that out.
Yeah. Because I'm not really sure how to operate this thing.
Well, perhaps she'll remember us and call in. I don't know.
Who knows?
But anyway.
Let's continue our madness here. Right.
Oh, how about Berlusconi is to appear in court? The Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's attorney says his client is due to appear in a court hearing in Milan to face charges of embezzlement and fraud involving one of his media companies. I thought he'd really squeak out of that. The 74-year-old Berlusconi is expected to finally appear in court on Monday after not denying allegations of breach of trust in business interests. The plan is for the Prime Minister to attend the hearings on Monday, but if he has institutional duties, it's obvious that he will not be able to come, said Berlusconi's attorney Piero Longo on Sunday. I don't know about that.
So... This is
a good one. Snoop's exposed, another Soros enterprise. Kagan, remember Kagan, the Supreme Court appointee, was representing Obama in all the petitions to prove his citizenship. Now she may help rule on them. Folks, this is really ugly. Chicago politics and the beat goes on and on and on. Once again, the U.S. Senate sold us out. Well, someone figured out why Obama nominated Elena Kagan for the Supreme Court. Pull up the Supreme Court's website, go to the docket, and search for Obama. She was the Solicitor General for all the suits against him filed with the Supreme Court to show proof of natural-born citizenship. He owed her big time. All of the requests were denied, of course. They were never heard. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper, doesn't it? The American people mean nothing anymore. It's all about payback time for those who compromise themselves to elect someone that really has no true right to even be there. Let's see what else. I don't think it says much more than that on this.
Yeah, it does.
No, it just gives a list of the Supreme Court cases. It gives a list of the things that are on the dockets. So if you go to this thing, you can actually look up the dockets and read it for yourself. Like, I'll go to one. No, it's no point.
Right, but you can go to rents.com.
Yeah.
Okay, and look for
Snoop's Exposed and another
Snops.
S-N-O-P-E-S. Sorry.
Exposed. Another Soros enterprise.
I guess it's something that Soros has to do with.
Hmm.
I don't know how exactly.
I don't either, but it's interesting. Very interesting. And let's see here.
Here's one. Rothschild Zionist Lieberman suggests no-fly zone, an option in Syria if violence escalates. Senator Joe Lieberman suggested Sunday he would support military intervention in Syria if its president resorts to the kind of violent tactics used by Libya's Muammar al-Qaddafi. Dozens reportedly have been killed in protests against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government, raising questions about whether the international community would get involved. Lieberman, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, told Fox News Sunday that if Assad starts slaughtering his own people, he will risk other countries imposing a no-fly zone, just as we're doing in Libya. He urged Assad to instead negotiate with the freedom fighters in his country. Right. He can hardly wait.
Well, you know we hate this guy. We really despise Joe Lieberman. And that's the way it is.
Egypt and El Baradi, WikiLeaks to the rescue. Once again, WikiLeaks provides a suspiciously timed help for globalists in need. Mohammed El-Baradi, U.S. International Crisis Group trustee and leader of the Western-backed and trained youth movement that helped remove Hosni Mubarak from power, has been running into trouble in Egypt recently. During the March 19th vote on Egypt's constitution, El-Baradi was attacked on his way to the polls by an angry mob calling him an American agent. His troubles were compounded when the constitutional amendments, which El-Baradi had told supporters to reject, passed by a large margin. El-Baradi, of course, wanted the constitution rewritten from scratch with a newly drafted proposal funded by fellow ICG trustee George Soros, ready and waiting to be ramrodded through. Interesting.
I guess... Sorry that our guest...
I don't know what happened with her. She must have made two bookings or gotten a wrong day.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. With El-Baradi steeped in growing political mire and dealing with rumors that he and his stooge, Wael Ghanem, are part of a Western plot, global news wires are now reporting a WikiLeaks release painting him in an anti-American light. The 2009 cables reveals that American officials were unhappy with El-Baradi. The news report also includes some of the offhand comments about El-Baradi's plan to reestablish ties with Tehran and his thoughts on Middle East peace process being a ridiculous joke. Despite repeated claims that El-Baradi was or is an obstacle to Western interests, his opposition towards America over Iraq didn't forestall America's inevitable invasion, nor has it hampered operations against Iran. With El-Baradi only a trustee of the corporate-lined International Crisis Group alongside George Soros, Wesley Clark, Zbigniew New Brzezinski, and Rashid Armitage, it's hard to believe his jabs were anything more than a rhetorical fodder for his impressionable followers. As rocks flew past El-Baradi on March 19th, one might say the barrier of legitimacy has been broken. Just as El-Baradi helped break the barrier of fear surrounding Hosni Mubarak's regime, El-Baradi's image is quickly being hobbled by his deep ties to the U.S., his disingenuous meddling in Egyptian politics, and now his failure to sneak in his Soros-funded constitution.
With a similar movement in Libya now overtly transforming into a Western invasion, Baradi and opposition leaders across the Middle East will be fighting an uphill battle against accusations of being agents of the West, a battle that one trick pony of WikiLeaks most likely can't help fight.
In the rest of the region. Perhaps sensing the momentum of the Arab Spring grinding to a halt, Nicolas Sarkozy of France recently cited the bombardment of Libya and the responsibility to protect as a warning to the remaining Arab states. In particular, he directed his warning towards Syria, stating that every ruler should understand, and especially every Arab ruler should understand, that the reaction of the international community and of Europe will from this moment on each time be the same. We will be on the side of peaceful protesters who must not be repressed with violence. Sarkozy is not hindered by the fact that Libya's opposition consisted of armed rebels from the very beginning who have been fighting Libya's government on and off with U.S. aid for the last three decades. Sarkozy went on to say that there is a new post-UNSC 1973 model of world governance. So that must be a UN.
You got to ask yourself, too, what happened to the French Revolution there they were having? You know,
yeah.
You heard absolutely nothing about that in the news anywhere. And was that squashed by violence as well?
This is interesting to note, as this is foreshadowed in a Brookings Institute report titled Libya's Test of the New International Order, back in February 2011. In it, proving the primacy of international law over national sovereignty was considered being at stake in Libya and the need to intervene being essential. Indeed, as the illusion of the Arab Spring phase and targeted nation states start fighting back, more aggressive measures are being rolled out to achieve the globalist objectives. This includes military intervention on behalf of armed rebels, torn right from the page of the Brookings' own 2009 Which Path to Persia report. Sarkozy's dangerous rhetoric certainly does open the door to intervention in both Syria and Iran.
There you go.
Oh,
so
boy.
That's where we are. That's where it's at. And we apologize for not having our guest on tonight. Don't know what happened to her. But we will continue with some news and views. And shortly we'll be having Woody in the ring.
Hopefully. If the phone works correctly and everything goes as planned.
Yeah.
Sometimes things don't. I don't know exactly why. Radiation detected in Massachusetts rainwater as Fukushima crisis worsens. I had heard that earlier in the week, but they didn't really say much more than that. So what does this article say?
Well, this is actually I was going to play another video. Fukushima crisis continues to worsen by the day. The nuclear experts around the world finally realizing and admitting we've all been lied to. I think maybe the situation is much more serious than we were led to believe, said Najimuddin Makati of the University of Southern California in Reuters' report. Massachusetts rainwater has also been found to be contaminated with low levels of radiation from Fukushima, indicating just how widespread the radioactive fallout has become. It's not just the west coast of North America that's vulnerable. In other words, even the east coast could receive dangerous levels of fallout if Fukushima suffers a larger release of radioactive material into the air. And
they lost
trying to engineer here, and it's not working very well.
We're
just,
going to
put it on. No,
we're going to play his opening music in just a minute. So
okay,
we'll do that in a minute. And what is this article? It's about the amount of radiation, and we can get back to that.
All right. But anyway, Massachusetts rainwater has also been found to be contaminated with low levels of radiation, including just widespread. We don't know. And Japan is going to find itself critically short of electrical power. So anyway, why don't you? Okay, we'll get back to this article later
and
if we have time.
We'll
and,
put on In the Ring with Woody's music, yeah. And then he'll be on.
Okay.
thank you, Lila. You're doing quite a job as an engineer.
Thank you.
Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, Barry's day in court, K-Rod springboards, and my predictions for the American League. All right, let's get down to it. As I mentioned last week, Barry Bonds' perjury case has started, and the fireworks have already been lit. People who were once close to Barry Bonds have now laid out a similar story and a timeline for his alleged use of steroids. The power of their testimony alone might be up for debate, but legal experts say that mutual cooperation strengthens the prosecution's case. Bonds' former girlfriend and Playboy pinup, Kimberly Bell, testified Monday that baseball's all-time home run leader first told her of his steroid use when she asked about a big lump in his injured elbow between 99 and 2000. According to Bell, he said it was because of steroids, because somehow it caused the muscles and the tendons to grow faster than the joint can handle, and it sort of blew out. From the basic layman's knowledge I have on steroids, that's definitely a true statement. Bell also told the court at Bonds' trial on charges of perjury and obstruction of justice that at least five times during spring practice, she saw him and trainer Greg Anderson go into a bedroom and lock the door. I'm sure they weren't holding hands and kissing. That account jives with the testimony of Bonds' former childhood friend and business associate Steve Hoskins, who said last week that San Francisco Giants superstar had asked him to do research on the benefits and side effects of the steroid Winstrol. Winstrol is commonly used in horses. When used in humans, it will give you a size increase and also give you a lot of cuts. So we're not talking about bulk. We're talking about size and a lot of cuts, which is, you know, a lot of pro wrestlers use that, believe it or not. Anyway, this is all when Bonds was coming off elbow surgery in 1999. Earlier in the day, Giants equipment manager Mike Murphy testified that Bonds' hat size changed from 7 1/4 to 7 3/8 around 2002, the year after he set the single season home run record with 73. Now, the only thing that I know that makes your bones get bigger is the growth hormone. And that makes your bones get bigger. It'll widen your face. Like, that's why, like, a lot of bodybuilders have that the gap in their two front teeth, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They take the G, and it makes your bones bigger. And obviously, it would make your head bigger. You know, Bonds is obviously not an infant, or his head would be getting bigger. You know, your head just doesn't get bigger when you're an adult. You know, you have to ingest something in order for that to happen. And to go from a 7 1/4 to 7 3/8, he definitely ingested something. And, you know, a lot of pro football players use that stuff. And, again, I said, you know, it increases your bone size, your bone density and stuff. You know, it gives you, like, a bigger forehead. And, as I said, it kind of spreads your face a little bit. It'll give you, like, that gap between your two front teeth, you know. So that's one of the side effects and stuff. You know, it's heavy-duty stuff that you definitely want. If you're going to take it, you probably want to be under a doctor's guidance. Anyway, that trial is only going to get uglier. I would be extremely surprised if Bonds gets on the stand. It's reported that he's not going to, but maybe if it goes really bad, Bonds will get stupid and get on the stand. But I doubt it. He's not Roger Clemens, and Roger Clemens, I bet he's so stupid. He'll get on the stand when his trial comes up in July, and I think that trial is going to be just as ugly. Anyway, moving on here, Francisco Rodriguez could have asked for a better spring. The Mets closer has not allowed a run over 9 Grapefruit League appearances, his first action since the team placed him on the disqualified list last August with a torn thumb ligament sustained while punching the grandfather of his child at Citi Field. Rodriguez also said he's trying to prove he can be a better person off the field. It's good for him, huh? Every day is going to be a challenge, Rodriguez said. He's undergone court-ordered anger management sessions during spring training and said he'll have about 20 classes remaining when he goes to New York. Gwen Rodriguez, he's learning how to deal with the situations in the future. Rodriguez said he hasn't stopped to consider how the fans might greet him at Citi Field. Gwen Rodriguez, he doesn't care. The only thing he has to do is get people out and do my job. Frankly, I don't think he's going to have to do his job all that often because the Mets frontline pitchers are absolute garbage. I would be surprised if he gets that many appearances this year. You know, he's not going to be closing that many games. The Mets just aren't that good, and they're not going to win that many games. So I don't think he'll be too busy this season. But, you know, maybe he can pick up his career a little bit, maybe move forward. He certainly gets paid an awful lot of money for doing not so much. All right, let's move on to my predictions for the American League. We'll start in the American League West. I like the Texas Rangers. You know, even though they didn't sign Cliff Lee, you know, much like the Yankees, the Rangers do have a good team. They got a lot of good bats. I think their only weakness might be in center field, and they can always just move Hamilton to center. So you got to like them. Now they've got some experience, you know, and, you know, they've got some other good starters. So I definitely like them. I think the Oakland Athletics will probably come in second in that division. Their starting rotation, I believe, led the majors last year with like a 3.5 ERA or something. They made a few modest offensive gains. They signed Josh Willingham, David DeJesus, and they have Hideki Matsui, former Yankee, DHing. I think the goal is probably to provide enough offense to support, you know, the emerging pitching stars they have. So Oakland Bears watching, they're always right in there, and then they kind of falter off. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, see if they can hang in there, at least get second place. The Angels, who did absolutely nothing when it came to signing, you know, they're talking big when it came to, you know, making a move on Carl Crawford, and they just never produced anything. You know, their pitching is definitely lacking. The one thing they do have, they get is great center fielder, Peter Bourgeot, I believe his name is. Supposedly he's the best thing since Devon White. I guess that remains to be seen. But other than that, I mean, they've got a lot of issues on that team. I don't see them, you know, making any great moves or doing anything. I just don't. They have a lot of issues. So, and, of course, the bottom of that division will be the Seattle Mariners. That was everybody's favorite pick last year, but they just tanked. They're very young. The only pitcher they have is, you know, Cy Young winner, Felix Hernandez. But for the most part, you know, they have the worst offense in baseball. They hardly score any runs whatsoever. You know, Suzuki's getting up there in age, and they just don't have a lot of good bats. And, you know, they got some nice young arms, you know, in the minors, and they'll probably bring them all up. But, you know, they needed to get some power over the winter, and they didn't do anything. So I don't see them doing anything fantastic. Moving on to the American League Central, it'll come down to the Detroit Tigers and the Minnesota Twins. It could go either way. You know, the Tigers have Verlander, you know, their ace. He had a very good spring. They have Porcello. And their issues are 3, 4, and 5. They got some great hitters. Maradona is probably healthy. Miguel Cabrera, if he can stay off the alcohol, will be probably, you know, possible MVP season. So they definitely got some good bats, and they're definitely going to make a run for it. As I said, you know, it'll come down to them and the Twins. For the Twins, if they can just stay healthy, you know, they got a lot of guys coming back from injuries. Morneau coming back from a concussion. I believe Kadir from a knee. Joe Mauer had knee surgery. So, you know, if those guys can all come back, you got to like the Twins. Frankly, I would take the Twins over the Tigers and in that division. And, you know, the White Sox, you know, will be a close third. They're up there in age. They have a team full of veterans. But, you know, I don't see them really doing all that much. Much like the team that will probably come in fourth, which will be the Kansas City Royals and the Cleveland Indians, two teams that don't spend a lot of money on their teams and just, you know, just aren't going anywhere fast. So that brings us to the American League East. It's probably going to be a dogfight between the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Red Sox certainly made some great gains over this, you know, over the winter. They made some great signings. I found one thing very interesting. They brought in Bobby Jenks, you know, possibly to get Papelbon's act together. They were shopping Papelbon in the offseason. I think there's going to be some issues in the bullpen. They're going to have some problems. I just, Papelbon's a little flaky. I think he's going to take, you know, take that super personal. Maybe he'll have a great year. Maybe he won't. But, you know, he's gotten worse and worse every season. So I'll be interested to see what kind of season he has this year. I would have to say the Yankees will probably win the division, and I say that why. The Yankees are very good. You gotta look at A-Rod. He's healthy finally. A lot of guys had bad years last year. They're going to come back and be, you know, probably have monster years. And then again, the Yankees are always laying in the weeds, ready to pull the trigger on a big move. They have a lot of young arms to trade away, a lot of young talent. You know, and come All-Star break, they're going to make a big move, and that's probably going to put them over the top. Coming in third in that division, I'm going to have to say it's not going to be the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm going to have to pick the Toronto Blue Jays. They have a lot of good young talent. And had they been in their division last year in the American League, they would have made the playoffs. So I like them coming third. The Rays will probably come in fourth. They're going to close by committee. Their bullpen has been decimated by, you know, free agency. You know, they've added Johnny Damon and that whack job Manny Ramirez, you know. So they've got some bats and stuff. But I really don't see them making too much headway. The Baltimore Orioles will be much improved this year. You know, they got a new manager, Buck Showalter. He runs a tight ship. Guys involved in every facet, you know, of the team. So we'll have to wait and see. But those are my predictions. And that's it for this week. Shout out to all my Woodheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club. The day has finally come, opening day, Thursday, first pitch, 1:05. So everybody, let's get out there and enjoy the new season of baseball.
Thank you, Woody.
Thank you.
have one more. We'll do...
You can bring it right up to blues, or you can bring it to... Yeah, we can bring it to blues.
Well, here's a little blues for
just
the...
Just a follow-up blues tune, a real traditional blues tune. Yes.
And because we had blue skies today, so we'll play blues. Nations such as Taiwan, which also depends on nuclear power. The DPP opposition party there announced today that it wanted to see nuclear power phased out by 2025. Taiwan is a relatively small island nation, and a Fukushima-like catastrophe would leave most of the island residents with nowhere to go. And unlike Japan, Taiwan is also vulnerable to earthquakes and tsunamis as well as hurricanes. In Germany, massive demonstrations, 200,000 people in four large cities, have brought the nuclear safety issue to the forefront, contributing heavily to the defeat of Merkel and to the rise of power of the Green Party in southwestern Germany. Germans tend to have very strong opposition to nuclear power in much the same way that most Europeans despise genetically modified foods. The nuclear power industry turns out to be just as corrupt as Big Pharma. The truth is that many nations are rethinking nuclear power right now thanks to the corruption, cover-ups, and outright deceptions that we're now finding out were behind the Fukushima power plant catastrophe. The nuclear industry, it turns out, is one of the big profit incest fests, where the regulators are deeply in bed with the very industry they're supposed to regulate.
And then again, what rich, powerful industry isn't in bed with its regulators? It's true with Big Pharma and the FDA just as much as it is with the nuclear power industry and its corrupt regulators. Every government-run regulator eventually becomes a marketing extension of the industry it was supposed to regulate.
That's why big government never really works. Most of the regulators who are supposed to protect the people inevitably end up operating as industry whores. This entire Fukushima incident is a direct result of that deep-rooted corruption coming back to haunt humanity. Watch for more reporting on this incident here at naturalnews.com. The Fukushima situation is nowhere near over. Now regulators are saying this might not take just weeks or months to sort out, but even years to fully rectify. The half-life of plutonium, it turns out, is a whole lot longer than the entire history of human civilization. 24,000 years. We would be wise to remember what we're playing with when we attempt to harness the power of fission.
Yeah. I don't know what this is. This is cool. Like, might be something fun.
The power of music and lyrics. You are what you listen to.
Subconscious and mind memorizes lyrics.
Oh.
And receiving. Let's
see what this is all about.
Yeah.
You are what you listen to.
Hi. Hello. We would like to tell you about the power of music, how it affects you, your mood, your circumstances, and overall well-being. We won't be talking about sounds proven effective by scientists. We will tell you about music you listen to every day in your MP3 players, computers, TV, and radio.
You probably have heard about things like, what you eat and what you drink, which is true. But have you ever thought about you are also what you're listening to? And we want to speak today about the songs with lyrics.
Now, some people might say, no, I don't listen to the lyrics, so they can't affect me. But I've seen a lot of people doing like this.
She's got her hand up
here. No, it's
right
almost
here,
like chanting, and they're repeating lyrics with such a passion. Now, I have one great example from my own experience. One summer there was a huge hit song. I don't know the artist or the title of the song, I just didn't like it. But it was everywhere, in shops, on TV, on radio, people listening to that song in the cars. So after some time I started to make fun of this song, and to my great surprise I knew all the lyrics. And I asked myself, how could this be? I don't even have that song in my music collection. And I just realized that even if I'm not listening, my subconscious is. And if it hears some phrases over and over again, it just saves them in my memory. How do I know this? I have actually used this before without even realizing. As a singer, I had to memorize some lyrics. I don't really like to sit down and learn them. So I just took that particular song, put it in a loop, and went doing some other things, like, for example, making dinner. I didn't listen to that song and didn't pay attention to the lyrics, or I wasn't singing along. It was just in the background. And the next day, I knew the lyrics. So for me, it was a very effective and a very quick method to memorize lyrics. I knew it worked. I just didn't know how and how it can affect me.
I have never listened to lyrics. It wasn't important for me. I knew by heart vocal melodies, but not the words. I just enjoyed the energy and feelings in that song. So you may think lyrics doesn't affect me. Well, at some point I discovered that even if I don't care about what singer was doing, somehow I know what this song was about. And now I do understand. This information comes to me through the feelings and emotions and also energy from the musicians who was recorded that particular song. It's like every and each note is resonating on that frequency of that feeling. So when I was sad, I switched that sad song. When I feel depressed, I switched that same song again when I was drinking and smoking.
Well, that's kind of obvious. We know that music lyrics are—they go into your subconscious, and you can remember them. So,
especially the catchy ones.
But
yeah.
You know, what's kind of scary is that a lot of these lyrics that the kids play
are violent,
and that's going right into their subconscious and becoming who they are.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary.
That is scary. That's a scary.
So let's go back and look and see if there's
that's
anything
a scary
else.
Thing. So yeah. Hang on a second. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. If there's anything I missed. Yes, there was one vaccine issue here or something bad. Sixth study in recent months links mercury and flu shots to brain damage and autism. The toxic effects of mercury, also known in vaccines, is
thimerosal.
have once again been confirmed, this time by researchers from the University of Brazil, marking the sixth major study in recent months to condemn the use of mercury in medicine. The new study reveals that mercury causes serious brain damage and is linked to autism and other developmental diseases in children and Alzheimer's disease in adults. Wow.
Mm.
Dr. Jose Dori, and his colleagues conducted an extensive peer review analysis of various studies and available information in major databases that address the effects of low-dose thimerosal.
Ethyl mercury
or neural tissue and behavior. They found conclusively that thimerosal accumulates in brain tissue, negatively affects brain development, and harms brain cells.
Oh,
all right, so now that's real evidence, folks. Come on. And let's see. Mercury is known to cause serious harm, especially to fetuses and children because of their small size, said Lisa Sykes, president of the Coalition of Mercury-Free Drugs, a nonprofit group dedicated to removing mercury from medicine. Why remove thimerosal from pediatric vaccines only to inject it into pregnant women and children with recommended flu shots? They removed thimerosal from other vaccines, so it should also be removed from flu shots. And several other recent studies confirm the numerous dangers posed by mercury, including one recently published in the,
Folia Neuropathological, Pathologica. Yeah, that's a magazine.
Yeah, that links the toxin directly to autism. Mercury is also known to disrupt proper immune function, damage DNA, inhibit healthy embryonic development, and cause cancer. The last majority of the flu shots administered in the U.S. still contain thimerosal, as they come from multi-dose vials that require a preservative in order to prevent contamination. However, CoMed says there is no reason to continue using Thermosol since safer alternative preservatives already exist and are currently in use in many pediatric vaccines that used to contain Thermosol. Isn't there a way to have a massive lawsuit against these vaccine makers?
They put in Congress that you can't sue them.
I know those bastards. And it's like they got you three ways to, you know, they get you every which way. And tons of
they know they are creeps. What did Sarkozy do now?
About
him up here.
Where's Johnny now? Jeez, everybody's banking out on us there today. I don't know what's going on.
Well, he's 1 minute late in calling.
Okay, let's see. Germany, Sarkozy remarks are dangerous. That Sarkozy little prick. Germany has slammed French President Nicolas Sarkozy's comments about the possibility of Europe's military intervention in the Arab world. He says, I'm very concerned at the latest public remarks, including the European partners, that we are not just talking about Libya, but also about other Arab leaders. Germany's Foreign Minister Guido Westerwiel. Radio station on Friday, referring to Sarkozy's speech at a European Union summit in Brussels late Thursday. Westerwiel said it was dangerous to threaten military action against autocratic Arab leaders other than Gaddafi.
Huh.
These guys are all the same.
Teaching, what's that say? Teaching
unions,
slams searching students. In England, they're searching students' cell phones. That's amazing.
I don't know what's wrong with the British people, man.
Teaching union has criticized the government plan for allowing the search of students' cell phones and their content, saying it would launch challenges to the teachers. National Association of Schoolmasters, Union of Women Teachers, said that the education bill for England that allows school authorities to search the students' cell phones and examine their contents is reckless. The National Association of Schoolmasters and Union of Women Teachers believes this plan, which also allows teachers to delete any message or picture they want from a student's cell phone, will end in a conflict between teachers, students, and their parents. That's probably true. See what else is going on.
Yeah.
We can... Oh, this is something I always like. Problem, reaction, solution.
Yeah. We can go to that. It's David Icke's site that we're working off of tonight, and it's might as well give David
And he always says that the elite cause a problem, they know what their reaction is going to be, and they come in and give the solution.
To me, a problem, reaction, solution. It works like this. You want to change society in a certain way here. You know that if you announce that openly, you're going to get an adverse reaction from the people. Imagine if the changes that have happened since 9/11 in terms of the destruction of freedoms and civil liberties had been proposed without 9/11. What are you doing? This is a fascist state. We're not having this. Oh, well, no, we've got to have it because it's terrorists. You know, problem, reaction, solution. So, you don't announce it openly. You, at stage one, create a problem. Terrorist bomb. I'm coming out. Terrorist bomb. I've got a wire loose. I read that in the Mirror once. He's got a wire loose, he said. They're right. And you create a problem. Terrorist bomb, war, run on a currency, credit crunch, rising food prices. Anything that will allow you to offer the solution you want to change society. You then tell the people the version of the problem that you want them to believe, i.e. Bin Laden did this, Lee Harvey Oswald did this. And the pathetic mainstream media, instead of investigating the official version, just repeat it to the people, and the people at stage two are supposed to react, and most of the time they do. React with outrage, with fear. And they say, something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? At which point, those who covertly created the problem got that reaction, offer the solutions to the problems they have themselves covertly created. And those solutions are changes in society
which advance the Orwellian state and the centralization of power, so the few can have more and more power over the many by this centralization of power. So if you look at the Second World War, these bloodlines were behind Soviet communism. They were behind the capitalist countries, or the cartelist countries in truth, of the West, and they were behind, including America, and they were behind Nazi fascism, bringing Hitler to power. They then bring them in conflict called the Second World War. Massive problem. The Second World War in just a few years, and people were saying in their desperate state, something must be done. This can't go on. They were open to stop this. Stop this. No more war. And so we got the solution. We'll centralize global power. So out of this came the European Union. That was justified too. Let's trade instead of fight, which sounded good at the time, but actually that wasn't the agenda. The United Nations and an explosion of centralization of power in banking and business and politics on a global level, justified by the problem. None of which would have happened had it not been for the Second World War, which these bloodlines funded, including the Bush family. The George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, was one of the major conduits for funding Hitler through a company called the Union Banking Corporation that interfaced with the banking and steel empire of a guy called Fritz Thyssen in Germany, who was an acknowledged funder of Hitler. And through that, how does anyone think that Germany went from thousands of percent inflation to a war machine that can take on the world in a few years because of outside influence and support, because they wanted that war? There's even another version of this now called no problem reaction solution, i.e. weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. You don't even need a real problem. You just need the perception of it. It's all a bloody mind game. And
that was David Icke talking about problem reaction solution, and also his new thought, no problem reaction solution. It's all in what people create in your mind.
Yeah.
And with that thought, we'll move on to our next guest, which is John Brennan. He's with us to talk about the environment, chemtrails, and other issues. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Leo, and good evening, Lila. How is things going there? I've been listening in for just the last couple of moments there, listening to David Icke. Very interesting clip you just played.
Yeah, I especially like that he's so quick. He came up with the, you know, he talked about problem, reaction, and solution, and he said, now we have a new one, no problem, reaction, solution. What's
yes,
created by the media in man's mind can create the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was one of the newspaper guys, the Getty newspapers years ago, when it came to some war, said, you supply the photos and I'll supply the war.
Oh, very clever.
You can manipulate the minds of the public through the newspapers and the televisions. They will just about believe anything that politicians tell them, just like before you go to vote them in. They're going to promise you everything. It's always a big letdown. The saviors never really save you, do they?
No, they never do, Johnny.
Well, they
that's
save
right.
Politicians.
The thing is, you got to save yourself, folks.
Not vote. So what's up, John? What do you got for us tonight?
Well, I had been kind of following that story that we played last week regarding the deliberate kind of manipulation of the Earth, which caused the tsunami, which led to the.
I had a hard time believing that one. You know, I don't know that they would destroy the entire world. Okay, for some reason I find that hard to believe that they would deliberately try to destroy the world, which is what they're doing. Because this radiation leak, John, is so massive. We were reading all about it tonight, several articles on it. It's just overwhelming. And the EPA now is trying to reduce
are not reduced, but increased the levels of radiation allowable because of this thing.
Leo, they could have been fooling around and had something worse happen than what they expected. What do you think, John?
Well, it's possible they just wanted to create a kind of a blow to Japan. Japan was apparently economically wanting to break away from the use of the dollar, similar to what Iran wants to do. So they had been warned, apparently, about an earthquake, sort of a earthquake bomb type of thing. That it's new technology. It's in the Environmental Modification Treaty, how they can cause tsunamis. And apparently it had leaked out to people in the Japanese parliament. You'll probably find some stories about that. I probably could have read one. I didn't think we were going to talk about this tonight. But I certainly think it might have just gone a little bit out of hand. And when you set off a tectonic plate and you decide to cause a tsunami or an earthquake, similar to what they did in Indonesia, perhaps they hadn't factored in the nuclear power plants taking a major hit. So it's a consequence of the initial deliberate attack to just give their economy a devastating blow.
I think they may have made that country, almost that part of that country, uninhabitable.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong here, but what I don't understand is if they're going to go to the extent of creating an earthquake, all right, and a tsunami, they could have done it on the other side of Japan where they didn't have the nuclear reactors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they just didn't factor that. I mean, it's sort of a new science. Let's just say it's not something that they've used too many times.
They must have factored that in. They must have known there were 10 nuclear plants right on the path of the tsunami they were going to create. You know, and they, I mean, to me, it sounded like they wanted to wipe out the Japanese. You know.
I agree with you. Just to attack anything that has nuclear power plants is to basically devastate the whole planet to a degree.
Yeah. I mean, what better way to blow up the world than to do that? But for some reason, I don't know. I'm not that malicious in my way of thinking that some bastard would blow up the entire world. Some mad scientist would want to do that, you know.
Well,
but they do. I guess they do. You know,
every day.
Bomb, you know.
They do it every day. They've been using depleted uranium, which is spread all over Iraq.
They
have no hesitation in using these sort of devices. It's almost as if that the elite are of a different DNA to us. That they, I mean, David Icke has said that perhaps they are. They're interbred and they go back generations. And we're getting into sort of whether it's the Anunnaki. Jim Mars has talked about it. Whether it's a different race of people or like a hybrid race among us. Perhaps there are. I can't prove they're not. I've read a lot about it. Then there's also the fact that these people who run the planet, the elites, they have this X-RAD, which is a chemical which is used by submarine nuclear sub people in case anything goes wrong when they're underwater, and it basically keeps your system basically all okay, even at the worst levels of radiation.
Wow.
If you look up the X-RAD, EXRAD.
If they have that, why aren't they giving it to the Japanese people that are working at the plant,
Well, they probably, they're expendable. They're expendable. If they've achieved their goal by, hitting Japan. I mean, don't forget, it's the same people who bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They didn't care then. They don't care now. They didn't know how big an effect on the world. Hiroshima would have. They did not know. This is a whole, when they first detonated those bombs, they'd done a few in New Mexico in the desert, but they didn't know the long-term effects. Just like Agent Orange. People are nuts. They come up with these weapons. They just have a go and see what'll happen. It's like they're suicidal in their own way. You know?
That's true.
You know, they do not think like you and me. They think in a completely, utterly different way. And this is what makes it so hard for us to understand how their mindset is.
Oh, yeah. I can't sort of wrap my mind around it.
And they have, don't forget, you have the all over the world, you have these underground cities right here near Washington, D.C., Mount Weather. Very few people have heard of it. Just Google in Mount Weather. These are huge underground cities. They didn't build these for nothing. Perhaps there is a time when they will go underground and just live for 30, 40 years maybe, or maybe even it only takes 5 years while the rest of us get fried. And then they come out and it's a kind of a wiped out planet, and now they can restart it in a new way using the robotic systems. All of these things about depopulating the planet haven't been hidden from us. They're right there on the Georgia Guidestones, and they intend to do it, whether it's biological, nuclear, or both.
Yeah.
You know.
I agree with you, John. I agree with you.
How they would protect themselves? I don't know. I guess they'd have better ways of Geiger counters, and none of us have Geiger counters in our houses. I think it was today Sweden had a radiation cloud over it. My sister in Geneva called me last week. They had a warning of an active radiation cloud, presumably from the Fukushima Daiichi plant or around that area, had come in.
I read about that too, yeah.
So stuff's moving around.
Yeah.
But will it affect us all? It depends on the type of fallout that comes from it, you know? If it's plutonium, bad.
Do you have a clip on that?
Do you have the remainder of that
clip? Or?
No, I didn't get to pull it up here. It would take me too long right now. I was actually going to talk about something a little different tonight as well. It was just a different subject completely. It was about the biometrics and, you know, the DNA databases that they've been keeping on us all. I don't know if you want to change onto that, but that was really the subject I wanted to get into tonight, just because I presume you guys would have talked quite a bit about the whole scenario there in Japan.
Yeah, it's really frightening. No, go ahead. Please go ahead.
Well, this is an article, and it's from Old Tinker News. And it's Just Say No to Biometric Tyranny and DNA Databases. And when I go to the airport every time now, it kind of irks me. I mean, to become a legal resident alien in this country, I had to give everything short of blood. Actually, I did have to give blood, measles or whatever they call it. They do a test for that. They fingerprint you, they retina scan you, blah, 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 everything.
Really?
But now when you go to the airports, even in Ireland now, when you go to come back to America, you're screened in Dublin Airport. They have the electronic fingerprint. You put your right hand, four fingers on this green screen, and it lights up. Then you put your thumb. Then you put your other hand on. Then you look into the little biometric thing. It takes your eye iris. This is all being put into international databases, and it's getting worse. This is the pretext to the cashless society that's coming eventually. But they're introducing it slowly and getting us all used to it. So I'll just read this anyway. The governments and large corporations are encouraging individuals to identify themselves using biometric data as opposed to traditional card forms of identification, such as driver's licenses and membership cards. The federal and local governments also have plans to collect DNA samples from people arrested but not convicted of crimes. The public must take immediate action to stop this assault on privacy rights and prevent the unprecedented implementation of global technocratic tyranny. Now, the cardless check-in at health clubs is a new thing. Some of these 24-hour fitness clubs, the world's largest privately owned and operating fitness center chain, one of these is in the process of implementing its Orwellian cardless check-in program. Now, 24-hour fitness is excited to introduce cardless check-in. Cardless check-in allows members to access their health clubs without a membership card. No more fumbling through your gym bag or purse Just scan your finger, enter your 10-digit encode or check-in code, and you're on the way. We've partnered with MorphoCheck, they said, which is a leader in the biometric industry, to develop the convenient way to check into the club by scanning your finger. We chart the distance between a few distinct points that are unique to you and come up with an identifying number based on those distances. 24-Hour Fitness has approximately 3 million members, 425 clubs, and 20,000 employees. That equals approximately 1% of the U.S. population that are now being encouraged to produce biometric identification by one health club company alone. It should be noted that for now, members may choose not to enroll, but will need to bring their driver's licenses or another government or school-issued ID each time they check in. Importantly, the cardless check-in program has obvious flaws. First, typing in the 10-digit code and performing the finger scan takes about 12 times longer than simply scanning the barcode on a membership card. Second, the program weakens human bonding, as it is now no longer necessary to speak to the employee the previously scanned membership cards, assuming their employment has not yet been terminated. Third, a conflict of interest arises if law enforcement requests the biometric data of a member from the health club. Should the health club provide the data to protect the privacy of its members? It remains to be seen how many 24-Hour Fitness members will voluntarily forfeit their biometric data by leaving their mark on the unblinking scanner. Hopefully, the majority will understand that your fingerprint is a very sensitive piece of identity. It's not something you can replace if it's compromised. Then the Glowometric Global Plan, whether intended or not, the 24-Hour Fitness Biometric Check-In Program and others like it assist the Department of Homeland Security in incrementally conditioning the public to accept its global biometric plan. This said plan will further erode personal privacy rights while reducing individuals to a new standard of dehumanized biological chattels. The government gathering more data and biometric and biological data. Providing biometric data, including Providing biometric data, including a fingerprint scan, is an act of submission that is being required by government and private venues more and more. To obtain a driver's license, you must submit to a thumb scan. If you refuse, you will not be issued a license. Your right to travel will be severely limited, and you will lack a common form of personal identification. In California, a thumb scan is required to obtain a real estate and mortgage broker's license. Beginning on February the 1st in 2011, the Golden State will also require fingerprints to purchase ammunition, substantial infringement of privacy, and the right to bear arms. International travelers that want to skip lines at customs are encouraged to enroll in the Global Entry Program. After landing, find the Global Entry kiosk, scan your passport and fingerprints, and be on your way. Amusement parks are also requiring biometric identification. To utilize an annual pass at SeaWorld, one must participate in the touch-and-go finger scan ID verification system. Walt Disney World has also employed a biometric finger scanner at their theme parks. And the next thing here is blood sample gathering. Beyond gathering biometric data on citizens, governments have also been stealing infants' blood samples without parental consent. Of course, this is done under the guise of protecting babies from diseases. Newborn babies in the United States are routinely screened for a panel of genetic diseases. Since the testing is mandated by the government, it's often done without the parents' consent. Now states mandate that newborns be tested for anywhere between 28 and 54 different conditions, and the DNA samples are stored in state labs for anywhere from 3 months to indefinitely, depending on the state. During March of this year, the U.S. House of Representatives approved the Katie Sapik Enhanced DNA Collection Act of 2010, that's known as H.R. 4614, and that was done by a vote of 357-32. Now, if approved by the Senate, millions of Americans arrested for but not convicted of crimes will likely have their DNA forcibly extracted and added to a national database. Obama has also endorsed forcing people arrested to submit DNA to a national database. In Orange County, California, the district attorney's office has a policy of dropping charges against low-level offenders who agree to submit DNA samples. During 2009, the office nearly quadrupled its DNA database in 9 months, with about half of the 15,000 samples being obtained from the cases pertaining to minor offenses. The Orange County DNA database is separate from the Department of Justice database, and those that consent to providing samples commonly do so without legal recourse. So why are governments so interested in obtaining DNA samples from their citizens, and what is the long-term agenda? Will the DNA collected be used in experiments or research? Well, this is a vital issue given the fact that scientists in Israel have demonstrated that it is possible to fabricate DNA evidence, undermining the credibility of what has been considered the gold standard of proof in criminal cases. We should all recall that globalists sponsored the eugenics policies that's eliminating the gene pools of those deemed unfit by the state. In the United States, that inspired Hitler's Nazis. Hitler and his henchmen victimized an entire continent and exterminated millions in the quest for a so-called mastery. But the concept of a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed master Nordic race didn't originate with Hitler. The idea was created in the United States and cultivated in California decades before Hitler came to power. California eugenicists played an important, although little-known, role in the American eugenics movement campaign for ethnic cleansing. Eugenics would have been so much bizarre parlor talk that had it not been for extensive financing by corporate philanthropies, specifically the Carnegie Institution, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Harriman Railroad fortune people. The main solution for eugenicists was the rapid expansion of forced segregation and sterilization, as well as more marriage restrictions. California led the nation.
Sounds like the foundation should be in there too.
Which one?
Gates Foundation.
Oh, well, the Gates of Hell Foundation, it's called now.
Oh, really? Who coined that term?
Well, I kind of did.
Well, we'll attribute to John Brennan. Okay.
Anyhow, yeah, well, California led the nation performing nearly all sterilization procedures with little or no due process. In the first 25 years of eugenics legislation, California sterilized 9,782 individuals, mostly women. So in short, history clearly demonstrates that the global elite and governments they control cannot be trusted with the DNA of the individuals that they have taken they've taken it from everybody right now, I think. I mean, they got my DNA. They've probably got yours somewhere along the line.
I just wanted to interrupt for a second, John.
Sure.
We've got 25 seconds left to the stream, so if anybody's out there listening, would like to listen for a few more minutes, you can call 1-646-915-9505 and we'll put you on.
Otherwise, you can catch us.
And we thank you so much for listening. Okay, and listen to the archives.
Yep.
Good night.
Good night, folks. Go ahead, John.
You want us, John?
Well, I'm going to finish this up. In addition to taking the fingerprints, they're also partnering with private industry now so that they got used iris scanners. And it's supposedly to make everywhere, much safer. But it's really not. It's being used. Eventually it will be when you go to the bank, you won't just be able to type in your number anymore. You'll have to have your fingerprint at the ATM machine, iris scan. It's getting ridiculous. When you go for groceries, same thing. It's just going to be a complete, like something out of Star Trek.
Or worse.
humanize. I mean, I personally, I'm an old thinker type of guy. I hate being asked for my ID at my age when I go up to Stop and Shop or something. It's like, you know, come on.
I know, I do too. You know, to buy some beer. You know, it's like
tell them put it back on the shelves. Usually, I just say I don't want it. Oh, it's okay. And say, no, I don't want it. If you're going to ID me, you know, just put it back on the shelf. You know, it's
really.
Everybody asks you for it, so you get asked in a liquor store too, right?
Yeah, but everybody has got to stop complying. It's all because of people complying. Yeah, that's giving away your freedom. You know, David Icke talks about that. We got to stop, take back your rights, take back your freedom. You don't need to be just giving it all away. We're not all bad people. Oh, it's catch the bad guys. Everything's catch the bad guys. Al Qaeda is going to come up in the store. Yeah, you know.
Right, as if the person looking at you can't tell that you're over 21, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have to call a manager at Stop and Shop every time somebody goes through with some beer. You know,
no, I know.
You could be 60 years old. They still got to have a manager.
Yeah. That's bizarre.
It is.
Right. They call a manager. I didn't realize that.
And, of course, you know, further on with regards to this, you know, the DNA database of the iris scanners, now we got the airport naked body scanners, right? Of course, we're quite willing to accept that. You see, it still goes, it keeps going up a notch. It's just going on and on. What is next? Brain scanners or something? I mean, I just don't know. You know.
Certainly keep pushing the envelope, don't they, huh?
They really do, yeah. They've constantly just... You know what it is? They're just bringing us down to the level of cattle.
Yeah.
I mean, tasers, when the police taser you, don't forget, those are really started off as being cattle prods. That was the original invention. They just... tune them over and made them look like they're stylish that the police could use them, but no, they're cattle prods. They'll take down a good sized cow.
Oh.
And a human, as you know. So.
And a human, yeah. Well, anyway, John. So that was a great report, John. Thank you.
Yeah, I was a little bit on the dry side tonight. I wasn't as well prepared as I'd like to be. But certainly that you made some good points there at the beginning of, as regards, you know, if the nuclear power plants had been deliberately destroyed by a man-made tsunami, which is possible to do, there's no doubt about that, would the global elite be that crazy that it would destroy the whole planet and not affect them?
Yeah, maybe they are. I don't know. They're crazy enough, that's for sure.
Yeah, they are. They are crazy enough. You know, they go to war at the blink of an eye. You know, and you've talked about, you know, I don't know if you mentioned Smedley Butler in your show tonight.
No, I didn't, but war is a racket for sure.
A racket. If you look that up on YouTube, I'm sure there's something there. He was a famous, very highly decorated general who admitted all wars are rackets.
Yeah. It's scary, but yeah, that's what it is, and all governments are frauds. Yeah.
Well, they're the elite, and we're just their cattle, you know. And every country has its leader who controls its flock. I mean, as I say to people, if Cuba is our enemy, we could go down there surely and take Cuba out in about 24 hours. It's right down off the coast.
Yeah.
But oh no, he's not a tyrant. He's fine because he's playing ball with the globalists. If somebody like Gaddafi obviously did not want to play ball with the globalists, or was in
this guy is a communist dictator, 90 miles off our border, and he's been there for over 40, almost 50 years.
Right.
And nobody's picked him off yet. You know.
Exactly.
So come on, who the hell are you?
It doesn't make sense. You can't have it both ways, folks. Either you go after all the tyrants, especially the one closest to home. You can, you know, there's more going on. So the media has been lying through their teeth.
Yeah, and all Cuba's really got is, well, they've always had a pretty strong military, but all they've really got is tobacco, you know?
Right.
As far as a resource? What other resource do you get when you say Cuban?
No, we're allowed yet. The Canadians can deal with them, but the United States can't.
All right, but tobacco. Cuban cigars, and sugar cane is about the only thing they sell there. So, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Fishing trips, I heard.
What's
really
that?
Good fishing down in Cuba.
Yeah, if you can get, if you can be allowed to go there.
Exactly.
But, and United States Special Prisons, which is
well, that's a little club Gitmo.
Yeah, I mean that's bizarre that they have it down there. But anyway, well, John, we gotta say goodnight, I guess. So we want to thank you so much for being on, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, and if anybody wants to check out about how they make these earthquakes and stuff, if you go to Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War by Dr. Rosie Bertel. Planet Earth, Latest Weapon of War. If you YouTube that in, you'll probably find a very interesting video. She'll explain, she's a gray nun, probably about 70-something years old, and explains how they do all this stuff.
Right. So
we'll
take a look at that.
Right,
yeah, well,
thanks very much for being with us, John, and bringing us such an interesting article. I appreciate it.
Okay, folks, I will look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Good night, John.
Good night, folks.
All right. And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and we wish you the best. And we're going to close with our song. So, by the way, join us tomorrow, Wednesday night, and Thursday night, and Friday night. This week, we're going to have George Dixon with us Friday night this week. So Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday also. So have a good night, and